702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
Yes TV channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, former President Jacob Zuma is at the High Court in Joburg, persisting with his private prosecution of Ramaphosa. President Ramaphosa is in Limpopo with the President of Botswana to inspect the bus crash site there. Ekurhuleni's last-ditch attempt to elect a mayor and avoid the council being dissolved. Joburg's spending on bodyguards and security for politicians. The DA wants to take legal action. And our book of the week is about why we kill: mob justice and vigilantism. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. Former President Jacob Zuma has really been occupying the headlines of the past few weeks with the rise of the MK party and all the various court cases that he is featuring in. Today, he's been at the High Court in Joburg, the Gauteng High Court, for his private prosecution bid against President Cyril Ramaphosa. And what is quite clear, what's evident, is that all of these court cases are really just a platform to electioneer for the former president and for the MK party. And it's something that is very familiar to him. It's also very effective because it allows that platform, right? And it does occupy the media space. Hell, I'm talking about it right now. So it is very, very effective. So he was there earlier today. And I must say, he's looking very energized. He's looking very emboldened by the ruling of the Electoral Court. And I imagine the latest Social Research Foundation poll as well, which shows us how the MK party is growing in KwaZulu-Natal specifically. So let's look at the actual court case today. Now, this is the private prosecution of Ramaphosa. It is related to the private prosecution of Billy Downer and Karen Morn. Zuma's accusing Ramaphosa of being an accessory after the fact. Now, he's lost a bunch of court cases around this already, but he is still trying to persist with this. Let's have a listen firstly to what Jacob Zuma was saying outside court today. He is speaking in isiZulu, and I will give an explanation after you hear this.
Imthetho yaseSouth Africa ilingani uma kuyo bantwini qembu leli ekuyilona ngithe ilona engizolivotela ngikhiphe leli kade ngikulo kuthiwa i-ANC ngoba kuseyona le ngiyaziyo sekuyi-ANC kaRamaphosa ngithi-ke hhayi mina ngoba imithetho iyashintsha isinembala isinakho konke ngeke ngisavotele manje ngoba ngifuna iqembu labantu baseSouth Africa abazolazi inkonto yesizwe.
So that's former President Jacob Zuma speaking outside court earlier today. A translation of that is, just as usual, South African laws are not equal for all citizens. The organization that I said I would vote for and remove the one that I was a part of, which is the ANC, because it is no longer the one party that I know. It's the ANC of Ramaphosa. I say because laws change, then I will no longer vote for it. So I'm looking for a party that people will know. Mkhonto wesizwe. So quite clearly, a platform for electioneering for former President Jacob Zuma. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter at court for us. Khumotso, good afternoon to you. Before we get to what happened inside court, tell us about the former President Jacob Zuma. I described him as being energized, as emboldened. Tell us about what happened outside court and what he's been saying.
Well, Andy, you know, I think energized, energetic are the right words to describe the former president. A lot of laughing, a lot of singing, a lot of dancing. Really looks like the Zuma that we remember, even, you know, prior to the MK. He looks like the Zuma who was very, you know, closely linked with the ANC. In fact, the songs that he was singing were all the songs that he sang as the ANC's leader. And the crowd here today really enjoyed his singing and dancing. And he's been speaking. He actually spoke for over 25 minutes to them, Andy, really just addressing the court matters that the MK has been involved in. A lot of gloating from the former president about his wins in the electoral court. And he says, many of you thought we didn't know what we were doing when we started this party. And the fact that we're winning in the electoral court shows that we know exactly what we're doing. I thought the former president just linking himself with the party that he's talking about as its founder, saying, when I started the party, you know, when I established the MK party. It was very interesting to hear that today as he addressed the crowd, but very energetic, very jovial, even inside the courtroom just before proceedings got underway. A lot of banter from him, laughing with journalists, you know, speaking about how he's got enough money to take out Lobola Fumo, as many of the female reporters in the courtroom. Very charming, former President Jacob Zuma in the High Court today.
Ah, touche. Wonder where that money is coming from. Okay, so let's talk about what happened in court, because it was a pretty quick appearance. The matter has now been postponed. Tell us about what happened inside court.
So we were all wondering, Andy, why the former president would want to approach the High Court at this point in his appeal process, because our understanding of what's been going on is that it's in the Supreme Court, and he's appealing a Supreme Court ruling, and he wants the Supreme Court to have another look at the ruling that it's already made with regards to the private prosecution. However, it seems the former president's lawyers wanted to update the High Court, which, if they are successful with their appeal, would be the court that presides over the private prosecution. They wanted to bring an update to the High Court about where they are with their appeal process. We heard the lawyer for President Zuma, Advocate Daniel Bofu, really speaking about how they've come here to give an update, but they also need time to respond to the papers that have been filed by the president's lawyers. You remember that after the Supreme Court dismissed this private prosecution by the former president, setting it aside for an unconstitutional, and he then approached the Supreme Court for an appeal. Then the president filed papers, Mandy, replying to this, or opposing this appeal, and really motivating why this appeal should not be allowed in the Supreme Court. Now we're at the stage where Zuma's lawyers must file answering papers. They must file a reply to why they believe this private prosecution should continue. And that is why the lawyers for Zuma, particularly Advocate Dalin Bofu, asked for a lengthy adjournment, Maggie, because he said they believe that once the private prosecution has been completed, once the appeal process has been completed in the Supreme Court, then the private prosecution will be able to get underway right here at the Johannesburg High Court.
Khomotso, thank you very much. Khomotso Modise, EWN reporter. Apologies, the line dodgy in some places, but I think we did hear what Khomotso had to say. But effectively, my argument here is that Jacob Zuma and the MK party very cleverly leveraging all of these court cases to electioneer, to campaign, to get as much media coverage as possible. What are your thoughts on that?
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Let's go to Ekurhuleni now, because the Ekurhuleni Council meeting today for another extraordinary sitting to elect a new mayor. You will remember that the AIC's Sibuyile Ngodwana was voted out, a vote of no confidence, which was pushed by Action South Africa. And what we've really seen happening in Ekurhuleni is that ANC-EFF coalition crumbling, because the ANC voted in favour of Ngodwana being removed. So where does that leave them now? We did speak to the MEC for Cooperative Governance last week, who said that if they don't sort this out in a week, which is by today, then that council will be dissolved. It could be placed under administration. So what's happening today? Nokukanya Mtambo, EWN reporter, is there for us. Nokukanya, good afternoon to you. What is happening at the moment? Are we going to be seeing a dissolution of the council or the election of a new mayor?
Good afternoon, Mandy. But I'll tell you is that the COCTA MEC Mvi Khumalo is here at the moment, playing somewhat of an oversight role, as he should, as the provincial government, playing also somewhat of a big brother role at the moment. The sitting was meant to kick off at 10 o'clock, but it hasn't. And so he's here at council. He allegedly had a meeting with the Speaker of Council as well as the Chief Whip earlier, just to give them a stern reminder of what's at stake here in Ekurhuleni. Should this council sitting fail to go ahead again, if either they risk being dissolved as council if they don't go ahead. Mandy, as far as we understand, the meeting is still expected to take place this afternoon. What time that will be, we still don't know, Mandy, but I'll try to get a bit closer to the MEC now and see if we can just try to get the latest from him in terms of what's going on. The MEC, thank you so much.
We observe what the law says. So we don't want to really waste a lot of time on what are the circumstances. We take it in a good spirit that there were circumstances beyond. And if there's anything unto, I'm sure parties in council can deal with that because they have got their own standing rules that they must observe. Their standing rule must be saying, when I postpone a meeting, what are the things that I must do as a speaker? And they can hold the speaker accountable on those basis. But from where we are, we simply gave it an interpretation. Our conclusion was that there was a failure to elect the executive committee.
This is just not good, MC. I mean, just broadly speaking about the issue of coalition and the precedent that's been set, particularly with things that are playing out in Ekurhuleni. Also, just in the way councillors conduct themselves. As Kota at provincial level, obviously you're concerned, but to what extent is that concern?
No, look, I think the first thing is that I've made my views. I think we are not ready for coalition government because it takes a whole lot of maturity for you to run coalition government. And I know people will tell us about examples, and those examples, you find them in developed countries. And we are still a developing country. So there's still quite a lot of issues that we still have to process.
I think we've lost that line to Nokukanya there, but you could hear very clearly. And thank you to Nokukanya for that, for bringing us the MEC. Mzi Kumalo is busy having a press conference there in Ekurhuleni, saying a very similar thing that he said to me on air last week, that he doesn't believe that we're ready for coalition governments. He's saying that we're a developing country, not a developed country. But at the same time, we have coalition governments across the country. In some instances, they're effective. In many instances, they're not. And this is our reality. We are in the land of coalition politics now, particularly after this election. So we'll watch what happens in Ekurhuleni. We don't know what time that meeting is going to start. We are expecting the ANC to field their own candidate, Jongi Zizwe Labati, for mayor. And will that coalition hold, the so-called doomsday coalition between the ANC and the EFF, or what's going to happen there? Well, let's speak now to the Action SA caucus leader in Ekurhuleni, Siyanda Makubo. Siyanda, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. We were listening in there to the COGTA MEC explaining the situation. As far as Action SA is concerned, what do you think is going to happen?
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us this afternoon. I must say the situation here in the city of Ekurhuleni can be described as very critical but stable. We brought the motion forward largely because of service delivery totally collapsing, largely because of the financial mismanagement of our finances in the city, and largely because there was that AG back and forth report which was not tabled to council in time. And Action SA felt that we had to be the adults in the room, and we brought the motion forward. Subsequent to that, what we have seen is that the EFF trying to negotiate and trying to get the ANC back to the table has been using their Speaker of Council. And we have the view that coalition governments can work. It just takes the maturity of political parties, your partners in coalition.
Yeah.
But we have the view that coalitions do work. But what we've seen in the city of Ekurhuleni is that we had a political party by the name of the EFF, who, when things did not go well in council, when they were losing debates in council, when they were losing votes in council, would invoke the speaker, utilize the speaker to collapse council meetings.
Right.
And that is why the speaker last week had the audacity to postpone that council meeting with no reason. An illegal act by the speaker.
Okay, so I just want to get clarity on what's happening now. Sorry, we are just pressed for time. So as far as you're concerned, is there going to be an election for a mayor today? We are expecting the ANC to put up a candidate. Will there be an additional candidate being put up by yourselves or by the so-called Moonshot Pact?
Yeah, so we've just been addressed by the Premier. Party leaders have been addressed by the Premier. And the Premier did express his concerns over the developments happening in the city of Ekurhuleni. And likewise, we did express our concerns to the Premier of certain parties that are holding council at ransom. Council will go ahead. We will move to elect an executive mayor. I know for a fact that the ANC will be putting forward a candidate. Exina SA did attempt to field a candidate. We consulted with like-minded political parties. We consulted with the Democratic Alliance. And the Democratic Alliance was not committed in supporting an Exina SA candidate. Other multi-party charter parties such as the FF Plus, the ACDP, the IFP were in support of an Exina SA candidate. However, when you do the numbers, because it is ultimately a numbers game, it is very clear that an Action SA candidate will not be successful in this vote, and therefore Action SA will not be fielding a candidate. So that's currently what's happening right now, but we are moving to elect an executive mayor, and this council meeting will sit and will be successful.
Siyanda, thank you very much. Siyanda Makubo is the Action SA caucus leader in Ekurhuleni, explaining there. And of course, Action SA did bring that motion for the previous mayor to be dismissed, and now lots of pressure on these councillors to make sure that a new mayor is elected today.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hi, Mandy. I would like to differ with you on the fact that the court cases for Zuma are anything in terms of the gaining of votes. It is only exposing him and also, you know, making vulnerable in terms of the voters' eye to say this guy is very, very vindictive. And I'm not sure why people keep on encouraging him to do this, because he's going to lose his pension, which is 90%, for MK, which is 10%. And by that time, when he go hangs himself, we'll all be saying, how did we arrive here? Zuma is a mad person. This is Jack from Hammanskraal.
Thank you very much for that. Look, it's subjective. My argument is, I think that all of these court cases are leveraged for him and the MK party. They're getting media attention. They're getting brand awareness for the MK party. And it is very effective. I'm not sure that people, well, his supporters look at that and go, he's mad for doing it. On the WhatsApp line, Mandy, so now the taxpayer is forced to bear the cost of police protection for the ex-president Zuma, who is now actively campaigning for a specific political party and no longer a government official. This certainly cannot be right nor fair, and is just another form of theft from the taxpayer by Jay-Z again. Look, the court, electoral court has ruled. We haven't got reasons yet, but the court has ruled that he can be a member of parliament, which I don't understand. As I've argued in my column on EWN on Prime Media Plus today, that if Zuma can be a member of parliament, then the system needs to be fixed.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Let's have a look at the situation in the Western Cape following the flooding over Sunday, Monday. National Disaster Management Centre being asked to make a disaster classification following the storm so that they can get aid assistance there. Colin Diner is the Chief Director of Disaster Management. Colin, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Mop-up operations largely done. Are there any areas of concern for you, and reflecting how do you assess the damage caused by the storm?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Yeah, so we are busy with the we're going into the assessments now. Areas that we still slightly console that we're looking at is the Garden Route District. The kind of end of the disaster or of the storm caught quite a couple of areas there. With a lot of rain. So we are keeping an eye on some rivers there. The Breda River in Swellendam Dam is contained. That was one of the concerns. And in the Harrods catchment area, there was a couple of areas that we saw water rise, but we have started seeing a steady decrease. So we're quite happy with that at the moment. There's a lot of clearing up that still needs to be done in the Drakenstein, Stellenbosch area. There's a lot of schools damage. I think we had damage to... I can confirm we had damage to 224 schools that had damage reports of different levels. And although the schools were open, there are still some closures, but they only are closures for, damage where it might be unsafe for the school to open. So those are getting attention, since yesterday. We've been giving them quite a lot of attention to ensure that we can open those schools as soon as possible. So those are really the areas. And then, of course, the informal settlements that we had in Kayamundi, in Stellenbosch, and then We had a couple of other informal settlements with big storms, you know, with the wind being the problem. So those are the areas that we're actually providing a lot of assistance to, you know, still as we speak.
Mm. The Western Cape government saying that it plans to ask the National Disaster Management Centre for a disaster classification. How will that assist you in terms of managing disasters like this one specifically?
So, Mandy, the way that it works is we will now start doing assessments on the damage. You know, I mentioned the schools. It's, for example, being 229 damaged structures. So an assessment now gets done on the damage of infrastructure, the damage to facilities, to roads, etc. And then what we do is after we've done our assessment with our engineering teams, we then look at what the cost of all that is. And then the National Disaster Management Center has to decide whether this is classified as a local or a provincial disaster. That's not, obviously hasn't been intense enough to be classified as a national disaster. So either they were classified as local or provincial, which we saw last year with our two floods we had. Once we have that classification from the National Center, we will then be able to declare it as a disaster. The Premier can then declare it as a disaster. And then the process is that we can then start looking at, firstly, looking at our own funding, and then looking at national funding to assist us to do whatever repairs and rebuild needs to happen.
Colin, thank you so much for explaining all of that to us. Colin Diner, Chief Director of Disaster Management, giving us an update there and reflecting on the storm damage in the Western Cape.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Mandy, I hear what you say about Jacob Zuma and MK and getting lots of publicity lately. However, it's all talk and no substance, as far as I'm concerned. And what's that saying? That expression, empty vessels make the most noise, or something like that. And my question is to voters is, what does the MK have to offer?
Well, I think the MK has to offer Jacob Zuma primarily. I think that's the great appeal of the MK party, is its association with Jacob Zuma. And if you look at the polling, whether you agree with polling or not, I think that it is surprising a lot of people how much support the MK party has. But thank you for that WhatsApp voice note. Keep sending those through. Let us know what you think about former President Jacob Zuma and his campaigning or court appearances interchangeably there. Just before the break, we spoke to Colin Diner from the Western Cape Disaster Management about what's been happening with the flooding there. Well, the Cape Town Mayor, Jordan Hill Lewis, is today joining City of Cape Town teams that are cleaning out sewers to prevent winter flooding. It's part of Cape Town's annual metro-wide winter readiness campaign. I did ask the mayor last week about whether or not the response to the storms were reactive or whether they could be more proactive. So this very much in line with that. And Ntuthuzelo Nene, EWN reporter out there for us. Ntuthuzelo, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Tell us what the mayor is doing and part of this campaign today.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Yes, the mayor did join city officials who were cleaning sewage and drainage systems in Bishop Levis this morning. And, you know, the mayor is saying that the city is taking a proactive approach in trying to mitigate some of the flooding incidents in the metro ahead of the winter season. Now, we know that in winter, Cape Town does experience a lot of heavy rains that usually result in incidents of people's homes and roads being flooded. As we saw over the weekend, the destruction left behind by the heavy downpours in Cape Town and across the Western Cape, the mayor is saying that more than 3,000 people's homes have been damaged. Most of those are informal dwellings. Some experienced minor damages, others were totally destructed. Now, most of these people are seeking shelter with friends and relatives at this time. But, Mandy, there's at least some glimmer of hope for them. I remember yesterday during your show, you spoke to the mayor about the emergency building kits that the communities are pleading for. And he said that they were coming soon. So I asked him today to give us a time frame on when people can expect those building kits. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Actually, I was very excited because our first kits arrived yesterday morning on a truck from Gauteng.
And so that's great. Obviously, it will be used up quickly now, so we will not have any in storage because we've got all of those people impacted by the storms. And then there were some for people in Drakenstein municipality impacted by fires. So those will be gone immediately. But I immediately wrote to the national minister and said, thank you very much. This is what we've been asking for. It's arrived. Now we need to see a constant flow. We need many more trucks.
The Cape Town Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis speaking there to Ntutuzelo Nene, EWN reporter, about those building kits. It's something that we asked him about on this show. Thank you to Ntutuzelo for bringing us that story and highlighting this issue.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Now, you may have seen some reporting by the Daily Maverick around Joburg's mayor getting a massive VIP upgrade, 10 bodyguards, 8 luxury vehicles. This is something that has really caused a lot of concern from residents, from civil society organizations, from opposition parties as well. So the report telling us that the city of Joburg is going to spend over 3 million rand a month on VIP protection, on 60 bodyguards, 40 vehicles. And we also know that this is happening against the backdrop of a revised and reduced budget from 83 billion rand to 76 billion rand due to declining revenue. So in other words, the city has less money, but it's spending more money on protecting the mayor and the speaker. Margaret Arnolds, the speaker of Joburg, will have a convoy of 5 cars and 8 bodyguards assigned to her. We'll speak to the city in a minute and get an explanation there. But before we speak to the mayor's spokesperson, let's speak to the DA Joburg caucus leader, because the DA wants to take legal action on this. Belinda Kaiser Echiozongjonku is the DA Joburg caucus leader. Belinda, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. What are your concerns here around this VIP upgrade?
Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to the listeners. Our biggest concern that we have is that there is, firstly, there is the upper limits. There are specific limitations that is guided by the upper limits within the Constitution. It's in the Act. What we are concerned about is that this particular policy is going outside of that guideline for the upper limits. And that is the concerns we have, and also the fact that initially we were told there is no financial implication. After the DA councillors obviously had said it's impossible that this can happen, they uploaded the financial implications eventually, and it's now also in the report to say how much it will cost for these. So our concern is in violation of the upper limits. Chairpersons are not covered in the upper limits, and those are some of the concerns that we have. And that is why we have also rejected this report in council, because it's violating that law.
Belinda, you're taking legal action, urgent legal action. What is that going to look like?
Mandy, as you would know, once we take legal action, it's a bit difficult to go into detail as to exactly what we will be doing, because there are different components of this violation. We are aware that the MEC of COCTA had informed the city, the speaker, in January about these violations. We are also aware that some of the chairpersons and some of the additional people that had received VIP protection had received VIP protection prior to them doing a security assessment. Those are also in violation. So a lot of the components are being studied by our attorneys at the moment. So I'm not going to go into too much detail. Okay. We'll wait for the court action.
Belinda, yes. Thank you very much. DA Joburg caucus leader Belinda Kaiser Echiozongjonku speaking to us there. Let's get response now from the Joburg mayor's spokesperson, Malima Ndlela Ndamase. Malima Ndlela, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Firstly, let's just confirm the accuracy of what we're hearing here. Is it accurate to say that the mayor will be getting 10 bodyguards, 8 luxury vehicles, all the other details here, the cost of 3 million rand a month? Is that accurate?
Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to your listeners. It's totally inaccurate, Mandy. And I think it's a pity that everyone who talks to the leader of the opposition in the city fails to ask, what the practice was when they were in power or running the city of Johannesburg. Just to give your listeners background, Mandy, what the policy that has been presented to council seeks to do, it seeks to reverse an irregular act that was undertaken in 2016 with the coming to power of the DA administration post the elections, where VIP protection services were extended to all executives and municipal and mayoral committee members in the city without any policy having been in place or without any provision having been made in a budget to provide that particular service. Now, the policy that is being brought before council now, or which has been brought before council, seeks to revert the city back to a structured process wherein only those who have undergone a threat risk assessment through the South African Police Services can be accorded VIP protection, as opposed to what is the standard and what was introduced in 2016.
So on the threat risk assessment, so that would mean that there would have to be a threat risk assessment on the mayor and or the speaker, and a decision will then be taken on what kind of security or vehicles they will receive. Would the city make those threat risk assessments public, and are you able to then justify the extent of the money that is spent on bodyguards and vehicles?
Well, with such assessments, I don't think they are documents that you would share publicly, because obviously they concern the security of the individuals concerned. But what the city would do is that it would obviously, in one way and form or another, be able to account as to why protection is provided to certain individuals in the city. Again, Mandy, I think it's important to just note that what the city is trying to do is trying to make sure that instead of providing blanket provision of protection services to everyone who occupies an executive seat in the current administration, it must only be limited to those who have a proven and validated threat as assessed by the South African Police Services, so that you are able to limit the expenditure and the provision of security to councillors, as opposed to redirecting those resources to fighting crime in the city and making the residents of Johannesburg safer.
And have the threat risk assessments been done already, or do they get done again in the future?
Well, those now are being applied for. SAPS has been requested to do those particular assessments, so that once they come back and provide us with a report, the city be able to withdraw protection to some of those to not be under threat, and provide security to those who may be identified as facing any particular threat within the city.
Mlile Mandlela, thank you very much for explaining that. Mlile Mandlela Ndamase, Joburg Mayor's spokesperson. So there you've heard the DA's explanation on this and their concerns, the legal action being taken, and then an explanation from the mayor as well. I, for one, would like to see the risk assessments and know for sure that if the mayor is facing a risk, that that kind of expenditure is justified. He's saying that obviously there's security concerns around that as well. I just think the very fact that we are spending a fortune on VIP protection, in fact, the national budget is pretty much the same that we spend on VIP protection, 2.18 billion rand, than we spend on the Hawks budget, which is 2.4 billion rand. And that just does not make sense to me.
702 and Cape Talk. Book of the Week.
It's a Thursday, and on Thursdays on the Midday Report, we speak to the author of a local non-fiction book. And today's book is titled Why We Kill: Mob Justice and the New Vigilantism in South Africa, by Carl Kemp, who is also the author of Promised Land: Exploring South Africa's Land Conflict. And in this book, Carl looks into what is really a disturbing reality of mob violence, of vigilantism that's become alarmingly prevalent in South Africa. He looks at the socio-political landscape. He looks at the roots, the realities, the consequences of vigilantism. And he does a lot of interviews. He hits the ground and gets his boots dirty, but he does also shed light on academically on the surge in mob justice as well, and looks at the complexities around mob justice. I just want to read you the first couple of paragraphs of chapter 4, because that really stuck with me. It says, in the early hours of Wednesday, the 19th of May, 2021, a mob over 200 strong congregated on a dusty plain in Zandspruit. A young burglar had been caught red-handed by a local vigilante night patrol and something had snapped. Led by the one foolish enough, perhaps arrogant or desperate enough to get caught, the mob set out to seize the other eight young men accused of terrorizing the community. Like Thabo Makhlango before him, the sacrificial lamb became the shepherd of his accomplices' doom. Come daylight, four of the nine lay dead at the scene. Sure, it's very powerful. And I remember being on air when we were reporting on the Sunspray incident, and this just takes you far, far deeper into it. Carl, good afternoon to you, and thank you very much for your time.
Hi, Mandy. Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us about your journey into the story about mob justice and new vigilantism. It's something that obviously we in the media cover far too regularly. It has become far more regular than it used to be. But what you've done here is really go into the bowels of why this is happening and what drove you to do that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It hasn't been, mentally very positive or had a very beneficial effect for me. I think, but partly it's because of, as you say, anecdotally, it's just so obvious that the issue is growing and growing. And it's such a symbolic phenomenon, by which I mean symbolic of the state of the nation. You know, this idea that there's a loss of control and violence is really now at a level hitherto unprecedented. So it speaks to a lot of what I think everyone in South Africa perceives, this chaos, this feeling that nobody knows what they're doing and none of the adults in the room are in charge, you know. And also just when you speak about it growing anecdotally, it's also just become a huge topic of conversation in my social circles, you know, at braais or on dinner tables or whatever. People talk about mob justice because we see it so frequently in the news. And very specifically, I want to mention that people really seem to be getting behind mob justice and vigilantism as a positive thing, as something that, you know, while it's not outright cheered on, it's definitely not condemned. And that's without me saying it should be condemned or it should be supported. But it just seemed very, very prominent in the mind of the nation. That's what led to it, really. That and also my amazing editor at Penguin Random House pushed me in the direction.
So as I said, get your boots dirty. So you look at a few stories. I mentioned Zandspruit. You go to Elim in Limpopo. You speak about an incident in Alexandra as well. I imagine there was no shortage to find the actual stories and tell these stories in the way that you do. But you do also look at the societal factors and what is leading to this escalation in mob justice incidents.
Yeah, look, I mean, definitely there's no shortage of stories, but it was extremely challenging to find people who were willing to go on the record to talk about these things. You mentioned Zandspruit, and that is, for example, a incident that I tried my absolute best to penetrate. I had two different fixes in Zandspruit, just looking for people who were willing to speak to me, and everyone refused. Everyone clammed up, you know. So Zandspruit is actually one of the instances in the book that I was forced to rely on multimedia and hearsay, which, you know, is very disappointing for a reporter. Elam and Alexandra, I managed to actually speak to people who involved personally, either witnessed or took part in the attacks as they unfolded. And yeah, it's extremely challenging, you know. If mob justice is very useful as a tool to frustrate police investigations and prosecutions, you know, because of the legal principles involved, who actually committed the murder when there's 20 people throwing stones. So it's very useful. You know, if you took part in a mob justice murder, it's much easier to get away with it than you personally murdering someone by yourself. So, yeah, it was very challenging. And I actually wish I had more time to go a bit deeper, you know.
You also speak about what seems to be this kind of latent support for mob justice and vigilantism and communities justifying or rationalizing it. On 290, and I don't like to give away too much of the book because we do want people to buy it and read it, you say, can we be blamed for our mistrust and bloodlust. Take a flagrant example. Jacob Zuma's evaded trial for the corruption charges brought against him for decades by exploiting our liberal court system. Wherever there's been a gap to obfuscate, delay, or otherwise stall the wheels of justice, he and his various legal teams have taken it with a plume, with aplomb. And, you know, this is the point that you make here is, when the justice system doesn't work, then people do look to alternatives, and that's why there is a sense of support for vigilantism.
Yeah, look, Mandy, what you say is spot on, but the funny thing is that in Jacob Zuma's case, it could be argued that the legal system is actually working perfectly well, because the legal system in a liberal democracy is constructed precisely to give an individual who's been charged or otherwise is subject to the machinery of the state every opportunity to prove their innocence and not to be imprisoned. So in a funny way, in that specific instance of Jacob Zuma, it's actually working very well. And because of how it's constructed and because of our very strong constitutional protections, somebody like Zuma is able to exploit that. So, yes, I find that quite ironic. But to get back to your question, yes, that is exactly the type of example of this lack of accountability. I think that's kind of what, from the bottom up, you know, whether it's a garden variety incident of crime in the township somewhere, or whether it's these grand political schemes that people seem to keep getting away with, people seem to be sick to the back teeth of nothing happening. And I have to say, a big part of the book is also not exactly giving credit where it's due, but you do make notice, or you do notice, and you do name some examples of where the state has been successful in prosecuting or at least following up. You know, I think a lot of people will tell you there's still pockets of excellence within the NPA and the police service.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that, absolutely, that there are pockets of excellence, but for the most part, I imagine not.
Yeah, it's not great. And those pockets of excellence, when they do work, seem to focus on more high-profile matters. You know, I think, for example, where I grew up in the Western Cape with poaching syndicates, abalone poaching syndicates, we've had a string of successes recently, you know, but that's cold comfort for somebody who lives on the Cape Flats who doesn't have a police van show up when they are the victim of a burglary. I think that perception is totally justified. I don't think you can blame people and keep expecting them to turn the other cheek and be the adults in the room when there's just too much in the news. And it's also too close to home for so many people. You know, who doesn't have a family member who's been robbed? Who doesn't know of a colleague at work who's been murdered or what have you? You know, it's just too commonplace. And it's also too commonplace that the accountability model fails.
Well, there's so much more to unpack in this book. I'm sorry we haven't got more time, Carl, but thank you so much. An excellent piece of journalism here and an important contribution when it comes to having a look at our criminal justice system and when it comes to dealing with the scourge of crime in this country. Carl, thank you so much. The author, Carl Kemp, the book is called Why We Kill, Mob Justice and the New Vigilantism in South Africa. I think importantly also, he does a look at solutions, potential solutions, and what the future trajectory of mob justice and vigilantism looks like in the country. It's a fantastic balance of really getting out there, doing the journalism, going to the areas where there have been incidents of mob justice, but then also looking at the socioeconomic issues, unpacking the issues around Operation Dudula as an example, and communities. Well worth the read, and an important contribution.